Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And welcome to an edition of Homefront. We're delighted to have Randy Stufflebeam as our guest today. Randy comes to us from Illinois. He spent 22 years in the United States Marine Corps. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, and it's pretty awesome that you're interviewing me instead of me interviewing you for a change.
Yeah, it is a pleasure. And you know what? You've got a lot of insights that our audience needs to hear. Among your credentials, you are the vice chairman of the Constitution Party. You got involved with the Constitution Party of 2003. How did that come about?
That's a very interesting question. I was not looking for a new party or anything like that. But what happened was the story of Chief Justice Roy Moore was unfolding with him and his Ten Commandments, and it was in that moment that I discovered that it was both the Republicans and the Democrats who had betrayed my service to my country. And through that circumstances, there was a rally that was being sponsored by a group called the Constitution Party, and I'd never heard of it. But when I went to their website and read through their platform, I realized I had found my new home. And within 3 months of finding my new home, I became the vice chairman of the Constitution Party here in Illinois. That was January the 30th of 2004. And within a year, became the chairman. And it's been a pretty whirlwind tour, but I tell you, when I discovered that betrayal, I found where I felt like I had to fight my battles.
Nice. So here you are now, involved with the Constitution Party. When did you actively start studying the Constitution?
Well, I'd have to say it was right at the start of when I became actively involved in the Constitution Party. There was a couple of forums that was suggested to go on and start talking with people, and all of a sudden I'm starting to get challenged. I made an oath for 22 and a half years in the Marine Corps to support and defend the Constitution, and quite frankly, I really had no clue what was in the Constitution other than that First Amendment. That was always, always, always my first hot-button issue about my freedom of religion and the freedom there to exercise my freedom and also, you know, my free speech. And so I started studying. I said, you know, I need to know what this is all about. And so I found myself challenged and happened to be self-taught, started digging into the founding documents, the Federalist Paper, the Anti-Federalist Papers. I started digging into the founders' writings to see what they actually had to say for themselves. And so it began what I believe is my lifelong love and study of our Constitution and our American heritage.
Now we're at a point in our nation's history where people are once again waking up and saying, hey, what does the Constitution have to say about things? For a long time, we've blindly led our leaders and presumed that they'll do whatever's constitutional because that binds everybody. That's the law of the land, and that's what we all accept. Now we're at a point where we're seeing a betrayal of the Constitution and people being more flagrant about not really caring what it stands for. There's a debate going on about Article 5 of the Constitution. People are debating, should we have a convention to wrestle back the control of our government. There was a vehicle put in the Constitution for just in case the federal government gets out of control. And the question is this the time to pull the lever? Here we are. I read your Facebook debates, and you're doing a pretty good job of holding your own, and yet it almost looks like the majority of the people are against you by now. And not to hurt your feelings or anything, Randy, you did a great job, but we're at a point where people are not sure what they believe anymore. The things that used to be a given are no longer a given. So I'm going to read Article 5 for you and our listeners. You probably have it memorized, but in case I have some really good people in my audience who are coming to us and you just don't know what are we talking about. So here is what we're talking about. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments. In either case, shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of several United States or by the conventions in three-fourths thereof, as one or the other mode of ratification may be proposed by the Congress. So here we are. Who could have guessed that we now would be scratching our heads and asking, how do we wrestle back the power from the behemoth? What is your take on Article 5?
Well, first of all, Cynthia, let me kind of address a couple of things here. Number one, I don't think the primary objective as to why our founders put in Article 5 was to wrestle back our government. I think that our founding fathers brilliantly understood that things change over a period of time and that they put in a mechanism whereby this Constitution could adjust according to the needs of the time. And certainly they understood that they were not infallible men, and so they put in a mechanism whereby they could amend, not necessarily abolish, but amend the Constitution to meet the needs of, you know, the things that they could not plan for. Certainly it is an opportunity to, you know, correct some of the things with government that needs correcting. However, the problem that we have are several. One of the things that that I came across in reading about this, a person was trying to address some of the objections against the Article 5. And he says the most common objection to an Article 5 convention is called the runaway convention objection. And I want to address this because this is probably the single most important aspect about the pros, you know, those who are opposed and those who are supporting the Article 5, is the issue as to whether the Constitutional Convention, some of them are calling it an Article 5 convention, some people call it a amendment convention. And let me tell you, it doesn't matter what they call it, there's only one thing that the Article 5 provides, and that's called a convention. Now they say for the purpose of amendments, proposing amendments, for the purpose of proposing amendments. So certainly I could see somebody saying, well, if you're proposing amendments, it would be an amendment convention. But that's, you know, I just want to make sure people understand the language that is trying to somewhat be flipped here to make it sound like, okay, this is a convention that can only deal with one amendment, or this is only a constitutional convention that can only deal with amendments. And so I just want to make sure, you know, that people understand what's kind of in behind here in this discussion. Now, one of the things he talks about is there is a clear strong single-subject precedent that would almost certainly be declared binding in the event of a court challenge. Now, what he's talking about here is that he's talking about the courts would be able to provide for a challenge to any amendment that would not be quote-unquote constitutional or would not be a matter of what we could do. And there's a couple of things that's perplexing about that. Is the history is that there have been many people who have brought to the attention of the Supreme Court the fact that they have evidence that the 16th and the 17th Amendments were not properly ratified. And yet, the courts have ignored this in terms of they refuse to hear the case. There is evidence. I'm not going to say it was or was not properly ratified, but I will say I have seen where there is enough evidence that would cause me to question whether it was actually properly ratified. So the fact is that we've got a court that's willing to ignore some of these particularly important issues. So am I safe this way? I don't feel it. Number two, he says the ratification of any proposed amendment requires the approval of 38 states. While I don't deny that that's true and that it would take 13 states to vote no to defeat any proposed amendment, the problem is that we have states that are not standing up to their constitutionally mandated authority. And quite frankly, watching how these states are starting to address many of the moral issues, and, you know, we know of a couple of them being the marriage issue, being abortion issue, being the drug issue, and we're watching how a lot of these states are starting to conduct themselves. You're going to tell me that you're going to have 13, I'm not sure you could find 13 states that would be opposed to a, you know, certain situations. And here's one that says there is absolutely no historical precedent for a runaway convention. Now, this is probably the most false statement of all, because number one, we do have a precedent in these United States of America where there was a runaway convention. Need I say the Constitutional Convention of 1787 that was called for the purpose of strengthening or amending the Articles of Confederation? The call was not to change the Confederation. The call was not to find out if we can do a new Constitution. The call was to amend the Articles of Confederation. And yet, it was a runaway convention. Madison and them was gone there, shut the doors, and locked the doors for over a month while these people met in secret. It's why Patrick Henry said, "I smell a rat in Pennsylvania." There were things going on that were not, that these legislators were not given the authority to handle. So there are several things that are so disconcerting about this. The point is, and I've been reading some other articles, and one of the, I would say one of the more important articles that I've read comes from Tom DeWeese, who is the president of the American Policy Center, And he writes and makes a quote from a Supreme Court justice, as a matter of fact, who had written a letter, and that letter, let me quote what this Chief Justice Warren Burger had to say. He said, "There is no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a constitutional convention. The convention could make its own rules, set its own agenda. Congress might try to limit the convention to one amendment or to one issue, but there is absolutely no way to assure that the convention would obey. After a convention is convened, it will be too late to stop the convention if we don't like its agenda. The meeting of 1787 ignored the limits placed by the Confederated Congress of that day. And let's take a look at some of the other things that have happened, Cynthia. I know you probably have some questions clarified, but there's a couple other points to make here real quick. Number one is the proponents of this particular situation of having this constitutional convention ignore the fact that people are corrupt all the way up and down this particular line. And by that, I mean these people are expecting states to control the convention. Okay, let's go down that road for just a second. Let's take a look at what happened in the Republican nominating convention of 2012, where they denied certain candidates from actually being able to be nominated to as their presidential candidate, i.e., Ron Paul and one of the other people, I can't think of his name right offhand. Oh, Newt Gingrich was another one. That was what people considered illegally denied their right to be voted on as a nominee for president in the Republican nominating committee. I mean, people recognized that it was a very, very corrupt process. And now here's the point. People say we are going to be able to elect our own delegates to the convention. Well, guess what? You have the opportunity to elect delegates to your own national Republican nominating committee. You had delegates from the states, and yet look what happens, and look that nothing has happened since then from these states and, you know, the delegates. So you're going to try to tell me that things are going to be different at a constitutional convention where, you know, the Republicans are supposed to be the quote-unquote conservatives, right? And the Democrats are supposed to be the liberals? Well, what happens when it's not just liberals and it's not just conservatives who are having their meetings? What happens when it's wide open? You're going to tell me you're going to get enough people who constitutionally understand what's going on, will make upright and forthright decisions, when you can't even do it in a meeting that's supposed to be conservative and upright from the beginning? These are many of the concerns, and there's even more that's out there, Cynthia.
Well, I agree, and what you're really saying, just to summarize it, is they lie. I mean, that's the bottom line. Is the question is, how naive do we want to be? The old expression is that one party is evil and the other party is stupid. And when, you know, I believe both parties have an element of evil and stupid in them, but the problem, not to call names, I'm sure there are many good people out there as well. Nevertheless, it begs the question, how naive can we be? I wanted with all my heart to believe that the Republican Party was more upright than the Democrat Party, because that's what I had been told. But once I was in the chairmanship position, I found out that it wasn't that easy. When I was a legislator in Jefferson City, I chaired a committee of 12 made up of both Republicans and Democrats. And I saw firsthand how the Democrats would try procedural motions that had nothing to do with the bill at hand, just to thwart the progress of the bill and prevent it from being voted on and to block our ability to move forward as a committee. But it was okay because the state provided me with an attorney who would sit right at my side and guide us along the way. So we were able to still navigate through the difficulty. When I became the chairman of a committee of 28 Republicans in St. Charles County, I had a higher optimism because I said, this is all Republicans, so therefore we should all be on the same side of the fence. The goal should not be to thwart or block good legislation. The goal should be that we all move together now. Boy, was I wrong. by the end of my experience, I concluded they're just as corrupt as anybody. They'll find dirty tricks just as much as the Democrats can find dirty tricks. Some people reflect it more than others, but we do have a side of us that is selfish, that wants our own way, and many people will resort to any means possible to get their own agenda across. Now, what I wouldn't have believed if I had not seen it firsthand myself, but knowing that human nature is evil and knowing that corruption is embedded in every entity, I heard somebody once say, I had a decision to make. I was trying to decide if I should be involved in church or if I should be involved in government. So I decided to be involved in government because I was tired of the politics. Anyway, there's politics everywhere. Most organizations do have that contentious element by people trying to push what's in it for them and not for the good of the organization. I wrote this week about the Boeing contract, which you have an opinion. Apparently your state is trying to give some special frou-frous to Boeing as well. And yep. I got one reply from somebody who said, "Great article, Cynthia. I'm a believer and follower of the Constitution." This is a person actually running for state rep as a Republican in Missouri. "However, I heard one state rep say the Constitution doesn't feed the people. I do realize it's a tough situation for the state reps that have to decide, do they want jobs or the Constitution?" How does one who voted against Boeing and stood for the Constitution explain their choice to these constituents who wanted jobs? Her real question is, if we have to pick between bringing home the bacon to our district and taking care of the Constitution, why are people under the impression that we have to pick between standing for the Constitution and providing jobs for people in our state?
Well, it's welfare mentality. You know, when they talk about it being an amendment, there are a couple of different organizations that are trying to push their own ideology. There's currently one that's out there that you saw where I've been posting that is dealing with state sovereignty, trying to bring back sovereignty back to the individual state. And while I certainly applaud the idea, the bizarre thing about this, group that wants to, you know, push this state sovereignty amendment is the fact that there's already a state sovereignty amendment in the Constitution. It's called the 10th Amendment. And the bizarre thing is that they're yelling and screaming because these legislators are either ignoring or absolutely violating the 10th Amendment. And yet, they think that just adding another amendment is going to solve the problem. Well, then just give them another amendment to ignore. Come on. Use your brain a little bit, folks. You know, that one just blows me away. The second part about this is the people, especially, there's another group that says there's 10 new amendments. They want to, you know, make, what is it? I think the name is Fruth, F-R-U-T-H, has what he's trying to push. And they're noble goals, don't get me wrong. I liked every one of those particular proposals that he's making in this. However, the problem is, and the thing that the judge made specific mention is, there's no effective way to limit or muzzle the actions of a constitutional convention. And let's just see what Article 5 says about that. Because after it says, on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of several states, the Congress, obviously, shall call a convention for proposing amendments. Now, here's the important key right here. The important clause, which, in either case, shall be valid to all. Let me say that again. All. Well, let me say it another time in case you missed it the first two times. All intents and purposes. In other words, the Article 5 says there is no limit to what can be proposed. And so here's the deal. You get all these delegates who are proposing one thing, but when they get in convention, the states could be complaining, Congress can complain, but when they get into convention, they are a supreme organization and can decide their own agenda. They can decide their own amendments that they wish to propose or not propose. When they get in convention, all things are on the table according to the Constitution. I don't care what they write. According to this fifth article of the United States Constitution, that convention can consider anything that it wants, and when it gets in convention, there's nothing to stop it.
Okay.
And let's to finish this point, let's not forget, how many times have we heard, and I know you've been in organizational meetings, you've been chairman of organizational meetings, I have been as well, how many times have we heard a motion to dispense with the rules? That's all they got to do is propose a motion to dispense with the rules, and they make up their own, and they're off and running.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. So why did the founders put the Article 5 in the Constitution if it's such a bad idea?
Well, certainly, we have had, 27 amendments total, so 17 additional amendments to the Constitution since the Bill of Rights, but not one single one of those amendments was done in a convention of states where all bets are off the table. That all of these amendments have come through Congress and not because of a limitation on the Constitution, but more of a limitation because of mechanics, they only have one amendment that they try to push through Congress. They only try to sell one thing at a time. And so we at least have a somewhat of a safety net in terms of you can't just completely throw out the Constitution because Congress just, for whatever reasons of mechanics, has never proposed more than one amendment. And again, we've had 17 of them since the Bill of Rights. I'm not against proposing amendments. I'm against having a constitutional convention to do so that can run amok and do whatever they want. And if they want to take matters into their own hands, and if they don't get conservatives elected, guess what? Gun control, abortions, marriage to whoever, and so on and so forth goes right wherever.
Yet, at the same time, we're at a point now where that's happening already. States are sending the Congress to Washington that we have. There are states where they're putting marijuana on the ballot and it's passing.
Exactly.
And actually, marijuana got more votes than Barack Obama in Colorado. Some of these questions emerge, and it makes one ask, what are we as a nation capable of coming up with better ideas? I'm disappointed in the fact that our nation voted to start the income tax. There are a lot of people who are trying to find other ways to get around the income tax now, and I don't believe we have the will of the people to do away with the income tax.
Cynthia, I'm sorry for interrupting, but here's the point about that. In fact, let me make a little plug here. I wrote a book called State Sovereignty, and it deals with that issue that you bring up right now, which was brought up, foisted upon us through the 16th Amendment. And, of course, they had to immediately pass the 17th Amendment, which actually changed senators from representing the states to representing the same constituency, the people that the congressmen represent. And it was 1913 when those got passed, and I have often made reference that 1913 is the year tyranny got its foothold in America. And so, but put this in light of, let's say, this well-meaning state sovereignty amendment, which I like the sound of it. Don't get me wrong. I do. I like it. But just not in a state convention because of all those other reasons. But here's the thing. You can propose all the amendments that you want, but until you get rid of the government's ability to have total funding, remember, he who has the money has the power. Money is power. And so federal government, as long as it has its ability to tax our wages and everything else that they didn't have prior to 1913, it doesn't matter if they put 15 state sovereignty amendments out there. Congress will still go around that by dangling the almighty dollar. And until they get rid of that, it's a moot point.
The states currently are not doing all they can right now to sober up the federal government. They're not exercising all that's within their control. There's so much more states can do. We're sitting back and wringing our hands in the armchair saying, isn't it awful? Well, I had a state sovereignty piece of legislation I tried to pass while I was in the Missouri House, and I went around to the different representatives to see who wanted to co-sponsor, and my original thought was, I need to keep control of this bill because as soon as the other representatives find out what a great idea it is, they're going to try and copy me. And my second thought was, all the representatives are going to want to be on it because, after all, why would any state official not want to be in favor of sovereignty? Well, boy, was I in for a steep learning curve. Lesson number one is none of the Democrats want it on because they like federal government having more control and being bigger because that's how they get their big government agenda across. Government will grow bigger if the Democrats in Missouri were figuring if they can't grow it bigger in the state of Missouri, they'll just see if Big Brother will grow it bigger for them. The iron fist of the federal government was accomplishing their agenda. So I did strike out with getting the Democrats to help me. Then among the Republicans, you have them in half, too. Half of them like big government also. If you like big government, you will not like state sovereignty.
Yeah, well, you know, one of the things is that if we can get our senators back to actually representing our states once again, corruption works in our favor. At the basis of all corruption is greed. And if we actually had our senators representing our states, once again, the greed would dictate that they would want to keep the money in their own pockets.
Yeah.
And so, with the state controlling the senators, and the senators and the states, let's just say they're all corrupt to the core, well, guess what? It does us a big favor. It gets our money back into our states and out of federal government's hands. That's a good thing. So in this particular case, corruption works in our favor. We just have to get these two amendments repealed, the 16th and the 17th, and then all the rest of this stuff would be moot points. We would start to see state sovereignty because these senators would actually start representing our states once again. And we would see the unconstitutional spending stop immediately because the money would not be going to the federal government to its burgeoning budget. And we wouldn't need a balanced budget amendment. I guarantee you the senators would make sure our federal government had a balanced budget. We had one in the late 1800s. It was balanced. We were running in the black.
Randy, in Missouri here, we have one Republican senator and one Democrat senator. If the states were picking the senators, they probably wouldn't do one from each party. But even if they did, the reason there was gridlock, the reason the 17th Amendment passed, was because some states could not be mature enough to send senators to Washington, D.C. They were grappling with each other, and in their infighting, they ended up not appointing any senator. Have you researched this, and what was your take on that?
You know, I'll have to research what you're saying because I've never heard anything like that. The way they sold the 17th Amendment is, wouldn't it be nice if you could elect your own senator instead of the states doing it? You know, don't you want that control? You know, and look how bad that's hurt us. I can't imagine our states just saying willy-nilly, well, you know, who cares who goes to the federal government if we have a representative or not? That's not what I have found to be true. What I have found to be true is that every state would be very concerned about who they sent to represent the state to make sure they got more money back in their state. And, of course, if every senator was looking at that, representing their state, then it would alleviate all that money going to the federal government. And one last point is with this, is that just imagine if who do you think our state legislatures would send to the federal government? You think they would send a rookie who didn't know his proverbial hiney from a hole in the ground? I got a feeling they would send their most qualified, the person who understood the federal government the best, and I guarantee you that would not have been Barack Hussein Obama.
People give the elected officials way too much credit. A lot of people asked me when I was in office, what do you have to do to get elected? Like, do you have to have a political science degree or a bachelor's degree in public management? What kind of training and education did you need to be qualified to hold a position in the state legislature? The only real qualification is you have to be old enough and you have to live in your district. And the real qualification is you have to know how to raise money and get votes. And if you know how to raise money and get votes, you can win anything. This is why Congress is so messed up, because it takes money to win an election. And once people get to Congress, they get so much money that 90% of the time, the Congress member will win re-election again and again and again as long as they want it. So we've turned it into a lifetime endowment. Once you get there, you're pretty much guaranteed to stay there as long as you want. You don't have to know diddly squat about the Constitution. You don't have to care about it. You don't have to give a rip about obeying the laws. There have been people like, they'll find any reason.
The last thing, you know, on my plate in terms of what's on the pros and the cons, you know, one of the things that people talk about is that, our legislator is such a corrupt system, and our legislators aren't paying attention, are breaking the law, are ignoring the Constitution, And what's real interesting is the mindset that, okay, if we can just pass a new piece of legislation that makes sense, all of a sudden, voila, somebody waves a magic wand, and all these people that have been violating the Constitution, they're going to wake up and say, oh, what a beautiful piece of legislation. I think I will finally uphold the Constitution. Like, you know, a magic wand, fairy dust is cast out there, and all the world is going to be, you know, great. But here's the thing. The very following article, Article 6 of the Constitution, the last paragraph, says that senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures, so the representatives, the senators, the state senators within their state, and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. And, you know, the fact is, I read it in one of these other articles, we have to have this constitutional convention because the legislators aren't listening. And I'm like, listen to yourself. Do you really think that passing one more law, passing one more amendment, is all of a sudden going to be the magic wand that's waved, that casts the magic fairy dust, that all of a sudden all these legislators are going to say, oh, this is a law that I'm going to finally uphold? Really?
Really, you've turned into a tenor. Randy, you're right. It goes back to character, and you have to have the will to do it. If you have the will to cap your spending, you can cap your spending.
The thing is, before the 16th Amendment, we actually had a court that protected our wages from being taxed by the federal government. And then after the 16th Amendment, that protection was eliminated. There was another court case that actually changed the fact that senators and all the Congress could then now spend all this tax money on pretty much whatever it was they wanted. And prior to that court decision, I think it was 1936, that prior to that decision, they were still limited to constitutional spending. So we've got a culpable court system and judicial system that's involved here as well. But the bottom line is that people thinking about a constitutional convention should be scared out of their pants. It should just absolutely petrify them with the thought of who would get in control of the Constitutional Convention, who would become the delegates of the convention. And then, once that was, I mean, look, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that they have to have an election. They could say, okay, we want the governors. Because Congress could make those rules. Prior to the convention, Congress could say, the rule is governors are going to appoint the delegates to this con. Regardless of what the resolution state, once Congress says, okay, we accept your resolution to have this constitutional convention, and guaranteed, none of the state's resolutions will be exactly the same. That's another misnomer. People think that each of these, it'll be a cookie-cutter resolution and all states will pass it. They're out of their mind. It's never happened so far, and it's not likely to happen again. And the thing is that once they get into a constitutional convention, all bets are off. And if they think any kind of a resolution, any kind of a state directive can prevent it, they have no idea what the Constitution really says, and they ought to be scared out of their minds of a state constitutional, and I mean a constitutional convention of states. And let me say one more last thing, too. There's an amendment that I support. I strongly support what is called the Personhood Amendment. An amendment to our Constitution that defines a person. I believe this is a hole in our Constitution because we've had the courts exploit this hole, that defines a human being as being a person, legally being a person from conception until natural death. because the courts have been able to define, well, a person is not really a person until they've been able to escape the womb. They've not been able to protect the unborn children. And I believe this would define it and force our courts to protect human life even within the womb. But I would never, ever say, hey, I want this amendment to be passed in a convention of states. It's insane to open up ourselves to unlimited whatever they want to do. And so, you know, I would like to see Congress pass a constitutional amendment based on that particular aspect of personhood. But Cynthia, this is the point. We've had kind of a safety net. Now, they've certainly passed some amendments that have been horrible for us, but they've only been able to do it one at a time. What if the whole thing was opened up? That scares me. I am scared to death of a constitutional convention of states.
Well, let me paint a vision for you of a big picture of what really is happening here. This country has been going through decades of moral decline. We've got more pornography, homosexuality, divorce, people who are having babies and never got married in the first place. We're having drug abuse. Heroin is coming back. We're seeing marijuana legalized. We're watching people shake their fist in the face of God. And our church attendance is down. Our private charity is down. We're not as benevolent, loving, giving, and honorable as we used to be. This is not a safe country the way it used to be. So we're watching in an aggregate a degradation of our country. Now we've got a Congress that is moving further to the left all the time, regardless of who gets elected. We are losing battles left and right. And the opposite is also possible. I want to paint a picture for you. If we saw other indicators, if revival broke out, if people decided we're going to fear God and keep His commandments, we're going to become more honorable, we're going to look at what the Bible says about how people should treat each other, we're going to start loving our neighbors again, we're going to pay attention to what we can do to make the world a better place, to make our neighborhoods better, to make our schools better, to do honorable acts of decency and kindness. And then if people wanted to be better people, we would elect better elected officials. And then Congress would say, you know what, I could raid the future treasury, I could spend out the wazoo and bind future generations to have to pay for it, but I won't. Then you would see Congress self-limiting. You would see state legislatures say, I'm not going to hurt people anymore by extracting the maximum amount of taxes. I'm not going to hurt families by trying to see how we can take children from parents. I will not work on usurping the other jurisdictions that are already in place. If that were to happen, we wouldn't need to be having this discussion about how we can wrestle power back away from the Congress. Have you heard anybody propose that for an idea?
Cynthia, you made exactly the point that I was making. Every 10 years in Illinois, according to our Illinois state constitution, every 10 years, the question as to whether we should hold a constitutional convention is mandated to be on the ballot and to vote for it. And probably, I would suspect, I would be willing to put up the Illinois state constitution against any other constitution in these United States of America and compare it, and I would be willing to put some money on it that our constitution is singularly the worst constitution. Article 2, Section 2, or something like that, says that nothing in this constitution shall be construed as limiting the power of the legislature. And So, I mean, why even have a constitution if it doesn't limit the power of the legislature? But it was passed, Cynthia. Our current constitution was passed in what I call the dope-smoking 70s. 1970, to be exact. And there was at least still a shred of conservatism in society as a whole. And yet they passed this horrible piece of garbage called the Illinois State Constitution. And there was a drive just a couple of years ago when the question was on the ballot. There was a drive by well-meaning conservatives to, hey, let's have a constitutional convention in the state of Illinois and get rid of this piece of garbage. And I'm telling you, Cynthia, I was absolutely opposed to it, just exactly for the reasons that you have expressed, because as bad as this Constitution is, and it is bad, Article 1, Section 22 of the Constitution, state Constitution, says, subject to the police powers, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. It gets worse from here. So it is bad. But, Cynthia, with the current mores of our society here in Illinois, given the current, all the rest of it, gun control, illegal immigration, on and on and on, the only thing that this Constitution would do is get worse. And so that's the point that I'm trying to make to these people. There is no guarantees that when they get into a national constitutional convention that you can guarantee me it's not going to get worse. And the fact is, we've got a good Constitution. State sovereignty's already in the Constitution. It's just people have stopped electing those who will represent them by electing the lesser of the two evils, because that's all they're ever afforded to vote for. And so, you know what happens? And, you know, even with term limits, I'm opposed to term limits because good legislators like Cynthia Davis are termed out, while then they get a chance to vote worse legislators in. So I'm telling you, this is a dangerous, slippery slope, and if people don't put the brakes on, this country could be in danger if two more states, all it takes is two more states to pass a constitutional convention.
Really? Where did you get that from?
Actually, reading Chuck Baldwin, 32 states have passed resolutions to hold a constitutional convention, and it only takes two more. Virginia actually had voted to have a constitutional convention and then rescinded that one. So at one point in time, there was 33. It went back down to 32. On his article, you can look up Chuck Baldwin Constitutional Convention, and it will come up. It was an article he posted on News with Views, and he specifically lists the states that have resolutions out there. It's not a... there's no limit on the time that it takes to get those resolutions and how long they can stay out there.
Is there any last parting word you want to tell our audience about what you're doing and why it's important?
Cynthia, you made the point, and this is the point. You know, amendments, you know, you can pass them until you're blue in the face. But until we get constitutionally minded men and women elected to our government, whether that's state, local, or federal government, until we get people of good moral character, as you have stated, it doesn't matter what they pass. This country is still going to go into decline. Now, I want to tell you, you know, I have no visions of grandeur here. I don't believe we can save everything about our country through politics. You mentioned the moral decline. And until we get society, until there's a revival that sweeps this nation, this we get what we vote for. And people are willing to vote for these people. I mean, let's face it. We've had Roe v. Wade since the 1960s. And we've had a Republican stronghold a couple of times since that time that could have absolutely reversed that, made legislation that made that illegal. So You know, it's not a matter of who's in power. It's the fact that this country is in such a sad state of moral decline. I view what I do and what you do as being the little Dutch boy with his whole hand in the hole of the dam, his finger in the hole of that dam, holding back the tide of tyranny long enough for the pastors and the Christians of this country to start doing their job once again and changing the hearts of men and women. Until that revival sweeps this nation, the best I can offer is a finger in the hole of the dam until they start performing what God himself mandated, that they go out and spread and share the gospel of Jesus Christ.
Is there hope? Where's the hope left?
Cynthia, I gotta tell you, the hope is in getting enough people that will start to stand up. If we can inspire people to stand up, there's hope. And what gives me hope, Cynthia, this personally for me, what gives me hope is the fact that I have such a strong calling on my life that I am doing what God has called me to do. And that one single thing gives me hope, because my hope is that it's not to just simply see if I've got the intestinal fortitude to take a stand. It's not simply a test. I believe the giant must come down. Just like David went and faced the giant needed to come down. It wasn't just a test of courage. And I believe if we can find and inspire enough people, we can save this country.
Well, thank you. And what is your website if people want to hear more?
Well, they certainly can. I thank you. It's constitutionallycorrect.org. That's .org. www.constitutionallycorrect.org. And you can listen to all my broadcasts and archives. And I've got all the Federalist Papers. I have all of the Anti-Federalist Papers. I have the Joseph Story commentaries. I've got several other commentaries. And if you want to see what the founders had to say about it, take a look at the website. The resources are there, and I'm working on more all the time.
Nice. Well, Randy, thank you so much for being with us on the show. God bless. Have a great evening, and I hope you'll come back again.
Thank you so much. And, hey, Cynthia, God bless you. I really sincerely, with all my heart, appreciate what you do on this show. I appreciate you having me here. But if I had one admonishment for your listeners, and that is, get involved. Don't take the back seat anymore. We can't afford to wait.
Okay, thanks, Randy. This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.